So it's our final election special, the last in our series of manifesto crunching interviews. We go through, as you hopefully know by now, all of the details of the pledges that the political parties have been making to you in their documents. They're seeking your vote, they're lusting for your vote, but let's see if they are going to actually deliver on what they're promising, and let's try to scrutinise what they're promising in the first place. Don't forget the election, the Assembly election, is next Thursday. Sinn Féin's Conor Murphy is here with us today. Mike Nesbitt brought me a lemon. DUP brought me chocolate. You've brought me...
Zilch. You're on a diet. I'm looking after your interests.
So you brought me nothing?
Nothing.
Is that to try to send me a signal, Mr. Murphy?
I'm not trying to buy your favours.
It's a pretty lightweight manifesto. It's short on content, isn't it? Lots of pages with pictures. There's Irish translation and a handful of pages on policy?
Well, it's a manifesto which is ambitious, but it's also a manifesto which is grounded in the reality of the financial situation that we face. We've had $4 billion taken off our black grant in the last mandate. We're facing into further cuts. That's the direction of travel that the British government are heading in. And so I think we could produce a manifesto that contains a raft of pledges that we can't possibly meet in an attempt to satisfy every sector or satisfy every constituency and promise in relation to pet projects. But this, we have to be grounded in the reality. I think we have to be straight with people, grounded in the reality that we're facing a very difficult financial situation. And within that, the executive has to prioritise where it spends. And we have identified a number of priorities in our manifesto, and we've costed them accordingly. And that's what we want to bring to the table in the negotiations which will follow the election and form the programme for government.
OK, so is it fair for me to summarise what you've just said? Is you're agreeing that this is a relatively small manifesto, but everything in it's costed and is deliverable?
Yes, the manifesto, as all manifestos do, contain a range of commitments. Some of them are financial commitments, and we have costed those, and we believe they're deliverable. They're a matter, obviously, for negotiation with the other parties, because we're not going into government our own, but we have contained also a number of pledges in terms of political pledges, in terms of introducing legislation, in terms of introducing strategies of changing the way things are done. So there's a range of issues in it, but where we have made spending commitments, we have costed those, and we obviously bring those to the executive negotiations on the other side of the election.
Let's see if you've costed everything in this manifesto. It's a little bit arrogant, is it not, to crow about other parties not costing their manifesto and then you say next to nothing in yours?
Well, you have a choice, Stephen. You have other parties who've clearly not costed. They've made pledges in their manifesto, flyovers in Lurgan and things like that, which they couldn't stand over. And we intend to be straight with people. We have costed, we are arguing for a reprioritisation of funds in the executive to meet the additional spending commitments that we have brought to the manifesto. We have costed those and we think they're deliverable. What we have to do, obviously, is get agreement in the programme for government negotiations with other parties. But we're confident that we are going back into the executive. We're very clear about that. We don't have an each way bet on this, and we're very confident that we will be able to deliver in relation to those promises.
Are these the same promises, the same type of promises that you made to people about welfare and then welched on that?
Well, in welfare we faced a different situation.
But you made cast iron promises.
Yes, we
you?
Did. Yes, and I mean, I've been on your show many times talking to you in relation to those promises. We made a deal in good faith. We found that the officials and the department kept coming back to say it wasn't delivered. The executive almost crashed on the basis of that. Yeah. We faced into a new government who shifted the goalposts in terms of tax credits, in terms of a threat to the Assembly that they would legislate over our heads, which would effectively bring down the Assembly and leave people exposed to the full impact of Tory welfare reforms. And in those circumstances, we did change position. We did negotiate the best deal possible. And we have, I think, as you have acknowledged, the best mitigation possible on these islands for people who are suffering.
It's not what you promised, though, is it? Because you spent the first couple of minutes saying that what's in your manifesto for the future is what you're going to promise.
Yeah.
But are those the same type of promises that you were able to undo to the people of this country over something as important as welfare reform? So if you buckled under welfare reform, how can anybody trust one word in this manifesto? And just to remind people, you know, and you said it, others said it, Gerry Adams said it. Here's what Gerry Adams said.
We're very, very clear. No one will have any benefit reduced which is under the authority of the Assembly here or of the Executive. And that was our key point on this issue.
And then after 1 year of mitigation, you're allowing disabled people to have their benefits cut. A promise to people in this country and disabled people. You've welched on them, haven't you?
No, we haven't welched on anyone. As I said, the best case scenario for us all was that the Tories don't follow this path of punishing the vulnerable to try and reduce their deficits. But that's the path they've chosen to follow. We suffer as a consequence of that. We struck a deal in Stormont House 1. We held out for a better deal than the four other executive parties. And then we found that that deal wasn't deliverable. And in the middle of that, the government changed in Britain. The Liberals went out and the Tories shifted the goalposts in terms of tax
credits.
Don't
blame them. Blame yourselves for not sticking to your promise in this country that you gave. You gave a promise that you did not deliver on.
I'm giving you the context in which things shifted. And in those circumstances...
Your promises shifted?
No, in the circumstances we're dealing with shifted. And in those circumstances, we hung in and we got the best deal possible. A set of mitigating circumstances, £500 million... invested through a separate group of people who have are dealing at the coal face with how these cuts impact on
and
people.
It's not £500 million, Connor, but of pounds, but £500 million of promises Sinn Féin sold out on to people in this country.
It's £500 million. It's going to be delivered through people who know exactly where the most vulnerable require assistance.
Is it full protection, which you promised people in this country?
What I said to you then is when the circumstances changed, full protection wasn't possible. Right. And what we did then, in those circumstances, we got the best deal possible.
Why didn't you stand up tall and say, actually, we can't be part of this anymore because we promised people in this country? Because, we gave them a solemn promise.
Because
no one will be affected.
Because the alternative to that was the Assembly was going down.
Well, that was always going to be the alternative. Okay. Did you not think of that before you made the promise?
No. What I'm saying to you, the alternative to that is the Assembly goes down and people are exposed to the full impact. The full impact of Tory welfare cuts.
All right.
Now, we have a responsibility and a commitment to people to defend them against this, and we did in securing £500 million of a package which is channelled through Eileen Everson's group.
£500 million, by the way, over how many years?
Four years. Yes. Which is channeled through Eileen Everson's group, which is not handled through officials whose primary function is to manage the money of the state, but channeled through people who work at the coal face of this, who know exactly where the needs are, and they have declared themselves satisfied with the level of support we're getting. And I think, as you and other people have acknowledged, the best set of mitigating measures that exist on these islands to defend people against those types of cuts.
So you found yourselves where you were. Some people might argue that maybe you should have thought about the different scenarios before you made a solemn promise to people in this country, which you did not keep.
We did, actually.
Well, don't be telling me you kept promises to people in this country and then disabled people after 1 year will find their benefits cut.
You're saying you didn't keep your promises to them. You're saying we didn't think through the circumstances. We did think through the circumstances.
No, I said you didn't keep your promise that not one person in this country would be affected.
Let's agree to disagree. The reality is...
We can't agree to disagree. You broke your promises to people in this country that no one would be affected. People are affected.
You said that we didn't think through the circumstances, that we should have considered bringing the Assembly down over this. We did think through those circumstances.
But made the promise anyway.
The circumstances changed in terms of the context in which we were operating.
But you knew they might have changed.
And those, well, you can't make a deal on the basis of what may happen in the future. You make a deal, as we did in Stormont House agreement, in relation to what circumstances were there at the time.
All right.
When those changed, we got ourselves as good a deal as was possible. And as I say, we put a £500 billion package together. Okay. That wasn't easy with negotiating that with the other executive parties, by the way, but we put that package together and we channeled it through people who are well experienced at dealing with the coal face where these problems exist.
So here's a chance for you this morning. Nick Clegg, when he made a promise on tuition fees and broke it, apologised to those people. Do you apologise to those people, including disabled people in this country, who you made a promise to and then broke it?
Well, firstly, I contest the fact that we broke any promise. But if we haven't got...
Do you want me to play Gerry Adams' clip again?
I told you how those circumstances changed, and we can go through this round and round the circle.
But he didn't say if and when.
Gerry Adams was speaking in, I think, December 2014, ahead of the British general
election. January 2015. Ahead of the British general election in
2015, when the circumstances did change and when you had a government that came in... unrestrained in terms of what it was going to do in these measures. And can I say that...
Would you just say that? You know that Gerry Adams is a skilled politician and others like yourselves. You could have legislated for different scenarios. What if the Tories do get in? What if they don't get in? What if there's a coalition? You didn't. You made a solemn promise.
How would you legislate for those scenarios?
Well, Well, as in, think about those scenarios.
Of course we thought about those scenarios.
But you made a solemn promise anyway.
And then the circumstances
changed. No ifs or buts.
The circumstances changed. So and if you're, go back to your original question, if you're saying, of course I'm sorry that we have not been able to fully protect all those that we want to fully protect. Of course I'm sorry that we are subservient in that regard to government policy.
Are you sorry you made the promise to them?
No, no, because we made the best effort. If we made a promise which we knew we couldn't, had no possibility of delivering, then that would have been wrong.
No, a promise isn't about a possibility of delivering. No, no. A promise is a certainty of delivering.
A promise is what you,
Connor,
consider you can do in those circumstances at that time, and we made a promise to do that. It then proved that that wasn't possible to do as the circumstances changed. And rather than just go back on that, rather than walk away from the executive spokespeople to the full gambit of the Tory cuts that were coming down the line, we stayed in and we fought against executive parties as well as against the British government. We fought for the best deal possible.
And you've got a year, and then people are affected. 1 year of mitigation for the majority of it, and then lots of people in this country are affected.
Of course lots of people are affected, yes. And that's why, as I say, we put together that fund to try and mitigate against that. And that is a better set of circumstances. It's not protecting everyone, but it's a much better set of circumstances than persist in the South, than persist in Scotland, England or Wales.
One of your top priorities, in other words, part of your, there's a 10-point programme in this manifesto, and one of your top priorities is, quote, building the momentum towards Irish unity.
Yeah.
What momentum? Is United Ireland any closer today than it was the last Assembly election?
Yes, I think it is.
Where's the evidence of that?
Well, I think that we have grown as a party who's committed to delivering United Ireland. We've grown very substantially across this island to a point at one stage, I think, in terms of votes cast on the island, we're the largest political party. And we are very focused and determined in relation to that. We are very upfront about our approach in delivering United Ireland. I think through the arrangements we've put in place under the Assembly and its institutions, the North House institutions, we've demonstrated that practical levels of cooperation on this island exist and can work, and that is against a set of circumstances over a 50-60 year period in this island where two states developed back-to-back.
Cross-border cooperation is a different thing. That can happen without Irish unity being any closer.
Of course.
Are there polls to suggest? Is there data to suggest Irish unity is any closer than it was?
Well, I mean, the polls in relation to the Scottish referendum when the campaign started suggested a very low support for independence. By the time the referendum came, there was only a very marginal difference between that, the yes vote and the no vote. And I dare say most people expect if the vote was cast today, there would be a significant support in terms of independence. So polls change. We haven't yet have the sort of debate they had in terms of the Scottish independence referendum. And we need that debate. And that's why we've been advocating. And that is part of the momentum. Advocating, looking at the financial circumstances that would exist, how health systems would operate, how education systems
operate. Well, the Irish government said on my programme, Connor.
Jimmy Deanahan said on your programme, who subsequently lost the seat.
An Irish minister.
Yeah.
That they couldn't afford a United Ireland.
Yeah, that's Fine Gael, I would suggest, don't have any interest in even examining whether they can afford a United Ireland. And I think we have to create that momentum where an Irish government is obliged to have a serious look at the circumstances and the systems that would need to be in place, the costs, the benefits, because there are benefits to United Ireland as well that would pertain to United Ireland, and that's what we intend to continue to drive forward.
And when's the last time Sinn Féin costed the financial implications of affording a United Ireland?
Sinn Féin has been engaged in a whole series of engagements with economists, North and South, over the last number of years, hosting debates, having our own views challenged in relation to all of these things. We don't have the resources of government in the South to do the necessary work.
So you don't know whether we can afford it or not?
No, well, in terms of dealing with the economists that we have spoken to, and those are economists, some of whom oppose the idea of reunification, we certainly believe that we can afford the cost of duplication on the island of services have to be fully examined as well. So we are very firm in our view that we could afford that. There was a recent study came from, economists in the States or Canada, which suggested that there would actually be benefits. Now, that all contributes to the debate in relation to this, but what we want is a proper structured debate, the same type of debate that they had in Scotland, the same type of analysis of figures and of outcomes that there may well be, and that's what we intend to push. And we've been engaging in that debate ourselves. We want others to join with us in that debate.
You can't achieve Irish unity, can you, without persuading a large chunk of unionist opinion to change their minds? Point to me to one unionist whose minds you've changed.
Well,
in the last 5 years.
Well, we engage with people. We not only...
Forget about engaging with people. You're engaging with me.
Okay.
Whose mind have you changed?
Well, let me say, we have a programme of outreach and which we've engaged with a broad swathe of people from the unionist community, not simply the unionist political leaders who obviously have a very firm political view in relation to this. We have had a series of engagements of Unite in Ireland workshops and roadshows right across the country. We have had unionists speak at those.
Roadshows.
We have had unionists who engage with us on the ground in relation to these matters. We have also recognised and done a substantial amount of work in terms of pushing out reconciliation.
Can you quote a convert?
Addressing the legacy, Stephen, it's not simply about this. When you get to the point of having had a proper debate of a border poll being set in place, then you have the circumstances tested in which everyone can have their say. But I could tell you people that...
Remember, this is in your 10-point programme.
Yes.
Building the momentum towards Irish unity.
Absolutely.
What, within the next 5 years?
Absolutely. Well, however long it takes. Momentum can suddenly move forward. As I say, at the start of the Scottish referendum debate, there was a very low percentage support for the idea of independence. By the time, within 6 to 9 months by the time the vote was
but
held,
you can't
that
produce one unionist convert. Not one.
Well, what do you want me to
and
do?
You need chunk of unionist opinion.
Do you want me to bring somebody who I have had a private conversation with within the unionist community and parade them out in front of you to say to their own community, this person has changed
so
their political viewpoint?
What, so they have to do this in secret?
No. Well, people vote in secret anyway. But the reality is this is a process of discussion and dialogue. It requires, according to the... Good Friday Agreement, it requires 50% plus one to vote in favour of reunification in the North.
Because
and the British government and the Irish government are then legally obliged to bring that about.
Martin McGuinness is talking about this in the manifesto too. We will build support for island-wide referendums on Irish unity within the lifetime of the next Assembly. So Martin McGuinness isn't saying, and look at the very carefully chosen words there, he's not saying we will have referendums on Irish unity within the lifetime of the next Assembly. We'll build support for it.
Well,
so it's a complete how long's a piece of string.
Well, again, that's a recognition of reality because it's the British Secretary of State who calls the referendum. So if we could secure a commitment for her to have a referendum next year, we would do that.
Yeah.
And what we want to do is build support.
But reality check, there's not much momentum, is there?
Yeah, well, it's up to us who want to change politics in this island to build that momentum. We are committed to doing that. We're growing in support every election we go out in for that position. That's our primary political position. And we have grown in support right across this island.
By doing roadshows.
Well, Stephen, you can denigrate this if you like.
You're no closer to United Ireland than you were five years ago, are you?
Let me go back to the first point. We're a party whose primary political objective is reunification of this country.
And so therefore, are you failing?
Every election that we have stood for, we have increased in support. At one stage, and I would need to perhaps count the votes of the last general election, but at one stage we were the biggest political party on the island. That, to me, is a significant increase in support for our primary political objective, and we intend to continue with that work. And that isn't just about building support for ourselves. That is about engagement with other people, those who support reunification across the island, but aren't in Sinn Féin necessarily, and those who oppose to reunification, whose minds we have to engage with.
Your manifesto says, let's move on, you want to, quote, seek enhanced economic and fiscal powers, including full control of income tax, national insurance, stamp duty, air passenger duty, broadcasting powers and the Crown Estate. So let's walk through this. So you want the power to control income tax in this country. So let's hypothesise that you get the power. What would you set income tax at?
Well, we won't say that now because it's on the same... Well, it's on the same basis as a corporation.
You won't say it now?
Yeah.
You won't tell people what money you're going to take out of their pocket?
It's the same basis as a corporation tax negotiation. What we're saying is the executive has an economic responsibility here to try and affect economic change in this part of Ireland. But they don't have any economic power. They have very little in terms of economic levers.
If you had the power, tell us what you would do. Would you put income tax up or down?
Well, what I'm saying to you is we would have a progressive form of income tax. But what I'm saying to you is, as with corporation tax...
There's a progressive form of income tax already.
As with corporation tax and as with any of these taxes, you're into a negotiation process with the British government. We haven't said in relation to corporation tax what it's going to cost because we're in negotiation with the British government.
No, you say you want... No, Connor, you say that you want full control of income tax. So there would be no negotiation with the British government because you would have full control of it. So I want you to tell to the people of Northern Ireland this morning, would you put income tax up or down if you had full control of it?
When we get full control of it, we'd examine the circumstances.
You haven't thought about it?
No, we have thought about it. But
well, tell us then.
Well, you don't expose your negotiation hand at this stage. What you do
is... to the people who you're asking for a vote?
What we have said...
You might put their taxes up, but you're not telling them?
No, what we have said is... We're clearly saying, and we have support of this in the thing, because the Assembly, as part of the Stormont House Agreement, has asked for additional powers, has offered to examine additional powers. They haven't said what they're going to do with them. What we want to do... It doesn't cost anything to transfer the powers. And what the executive then has to do is examine how it uses those powers.
Okay, so for middle income earners who they're on the 40% tax rate, aren't they? The middle income earners who are they're on, I don't know what it is, 40 or 50 odd grand a year, and then it goes and then they hit the 40% tax bracket. Would you lower that for them, or would you put it up if you had the full power?
Well, I've already said to you, what we do is you negotiate to get the power. And then you decide as an executive how to use
the power.
What would
you do if you got the power? What do you mean you decide as an executive? So Sinn Féin wouldn't have a position on it?
Oh, Sinn Féin would have a position.
What is it?
Let's go and secure the power first and see what it costs
us to
do.
So you want people to give you the power of how much money comes out of their pay packet, but you don't want to tell them what you would do with that power?
Well, what we're saying to people is people give us the power at the moment for responsibility over the economy. We don't have any economic levers. And what we're saying is we want economic levers. To enable us to raise our own revenue so we can direct our own form of economic recovery and not be subservient to decisions made in London in the interests of the south of England.
Well, at least London have a current policy on at the minute. We know what the 20% threshold is. We know what the 40% threshold is. We know what the 45% threshold is. Sinn Féin hasn't a clue.
We do have a clue. But
well, tell us.
No, what I'm saying to you is you get the power in your hands first and then you decide what to do with it.
Really?
Yes.
You get the power. The people give you the power. And then you decide what to do when you've got... You decide what to do to them.
Well,
the public of Northern Ireland, you decide what to do with them after they've given you the power.
The public of Northern Ireland elect us.
Based on what they know you've promised to do.
Yeah.
What do you promise to do to income tax?
Well, we promise to try and secure the power. If we're going to do something with that, then we can certainly bring that to the public.
National insurance, up or down?
Same argument applies.
You won't tell us?
It's not that I won't tell you. I'm telling you we need to secure
the
power.
You don't know, do you?
We do. I'm saying we need
to... So it's a secret?
I'm saying we need to secure those powers. Each one of those powers that is negotiated from the government, as with corporation tax, is a negotiation which you have with Treasury.
Not a negotiation you have with Treasury if you have the power.
To get the power.
No, but if you then have the power, what do you do with it? That's what I'm trying to establish this morning.
Well,
it's a pretty basic question and an important question to people in this country. Income tax... is determines the amount of money they have left to spend on their children and spend on their lives. And Sinn Féin's now keeping it a secret.
We're not keeping
it
a secret. And what I'm saying, let's examine what we've done with the very limited.
No, let's not. We'll get on to that.
Well, hold on. Let's examine what we've done with the very limited revenue raising powers we have. We haven't imposed water charges on families because we have said that families are hard pressed and can't afford to pay them. So we have no intention of trying to use any powers that we have in relation to revenue raising to try and penalise hard-working families. What we want to do is we want to have our hands in economic levers, because there's not much point in the executive having responsibility for economic recovery here but not having any power or little or no power to actually do anything.
Is there any point in standing for election and putting into your manifesto that you want the power to do something and not telling people what you would do with it? In other words, just give it to us and we'll decide later. Is there any point in people working like that in this country?
We have put in the...
For example, let me ask you,
we put in the Fresh Start Agreement that we want to have aggregates levy, stamp duty and landfill tax. Now, there's no indication of what the executive is going to do with those, but all of the parties have signed up to putting those in the Fresh Start Agreement. And what we are saying through that is the executive wants to have more economic levers at his disposal. And of course, then, what is done with those economic levers is done with the authority of the people who elect us.
Would you, for example, because the top rate of tax for those people earning over £150,000 a year, the top rate of tax was recently cut from 50% to 45%. Would you put it up?
Well, we have expressed opposition at a time when the British government are penalising the most vulnerable people in society, that they're giving tax breaks to the wealthy.
So is it Sinn Féin's policy to put it back up if you got the power again?
Well, what I'm saying is, what we argue for is to get the power, as we've done with the aggregates levy, the stamp duty, the landfill tax. We argue to get the power, and then obviously you consult with the community as to how that power is used. But we have a position where the limited revenue raising powers that we currently have, that we have used them in a way which doesn't penalise hard-working families. And we have criticised the British government for giving tax breaks to the wealthy while they're penalising the poor.
I guess what we could do, and let's not, because we've got another half an hour, but I guess what we could do is I could sit here and say, well, look, that's the interview over then. All people should do in this country, everybody vote for Sinn Féin. You have no idea what you're getting. Just give them the power. They'll keep secret what they're determined to do. I'm sure you'll find out after you can't do anything about it because you've already given them their vote.
No, well, that's clearly not the case. What I've pointed you to is an example of what limited revenue raising powers we have, how we've used them. What I'm saying is that the parties here agree that we need more economic levers. All of the parties agree.
But you won't tell us what you're going to do with it.
Well, all of the parties agree that, and as I say, we already have in the Fresh Start Agreement asked for three different economic levers to apply.
Okay.
If we got those powers, we would obviously consult with people as to how they're used. But people know Sinn Féin's broad view in terms of progressive taxation policies.
Let's look at more policies then. You plan to, quote, commit $1 billion to additional health spending.
Yes.
Is it just a coincidence that that's exactly the same as what the DUP is saying?
Well,
did you do a deal with them?
No, we didn't at all. But I suppose what it does reflect...
Copying their homework?
It does reflect... No, there's a substantial number of differences in our manifesto from theirs. But what it does reflect is, I suppose, the economic reality in that we have had responsibility for running the executive over the last 9 years. We know what's available to us. We know what's doable. And I think this point applies to the other parties too. We realise that in a negotiation on the other side of this, the executive are going to have to make priorities, and people are telling us, as they're telling the other political parties, and I've listened to other parties on your show, are telling them that health is a priority. So therefore, we want to prioritise it in a way which adds more money to it. But
right. So it's a coincidence that that's exactly the same pledge as the DUP.
Yes, it is.
There have been no discussions between Sinn Féin and the DUP on that.
No, but we know, as I say, it's probably no surprise that we know what's doable within the next election. But we have different spending commitments than they have outlined in their manifesto.
Well, is it doable? Because that's about a 20% increase in the health budget over the Assembly term. Mm. You know what I'm going to ask? Where's that money coming from?
Yeah. Well, it's going to come from a combination of things. One, there is some Barnett consequential money coming. That's part of it. But it's going to come from essentially a reprioritisation. The Assembly has 2 weeks beyond the election to prioritise around where it wants to spend its money in the programme for government. In the 2015-16 budget, we have already identified 148 million extra for health. And what we want to do is then secure that in the budget going forward and incrementally add to that over the next 5 years to bring it up to spending level of $1 billion. And that included with other spending priorities that we've outlined, amounts to about less than 0.5% of the block grant.
Okay, so but
incrementally
it must,
year on year.
But it must mean, Conor, because the Barnett consequentials, that's about 200 million over 4 years.
Yes.
So there's a funding gap for you to do
this at least. Yes.
That must mean big pain for some other departments.
Well,
services would Sinn Féin cut in order to prioritise the health service?
Well, it does mean pain, but as I say, it is an incremental increase. We have had, in reallocations year on year in the executive, £168 million in the monitoring rounds coming back into spend.
So you say it does mean pain. Where would the pain be?
Well, what the executive has to do, this is what the programme for negotiations are for 2 weeks on the other side of the Assembly election on the 5th of May. The executive has to reprioritise around its programme for government
and
commitments.
And when Sinn Féin's in there, what would your priorities be for where the pain should go?
Well, what I'm saying is that the other departments have taken hits as we've gone along. What we want to do is minimise that, and that's why the proposals that we're bringing forward are less than 0.5% year on year increment on top of our block grant.
You've said that.
So that means, that means that if there is pain to be spread, that we're keeping it as low as possible.
I hear that.
So,
are you going to keep the pain secret too?
No, we're not. But
so we don't know if you're putting our income tax up or down.
No.
We don't know if you're putting our national insurance up or down. Will you tell us where the pain will be? What services will you cut?
Well, what I'm saying to you is there is a negotiation to be had. We're bringing prioritisation proposals to it. And what you do is then you spread across other departments, which have less of a priority, as the executive parties agree, where the less the priority is.
I understand there's a negotiation. I understand that. Mm. What I'm trying to ask you is, tell the people of Northern Ireland, the departments you identify should be less priority, so that those departments are the ones who are getting the pain, as you describe it. Which are those in Sinn Féin's view?
Well, can I say, all departments get pain because we've had a £4 billion cut of our block grant. So everybody's a pain, including health.
But the pain will be worse.
Including education. Well, as I say, it's a very marginal thing. We're proposing a marginal increase, which we think is doable in terms of what is reallocated year on year. We've 168 million average year on year is reallocated.
Did you say that the £1 billion for health is marginal?
No, no, what I'm saying is the incremental increase year on year is marginal. So, for instance, if you, the £148 million that we have put in to the budget for next year, if you take that as your start line, then year on year, you're adding to that, and that isn't just the health we're talking about, this is the entirety of our proposals, you're adding £51 million 1 year, £44 million the next year, £48 million, £39 million. Okay. Incremental increase on top of what you've already